Edutainment Learning is powered by Academica Virtual Education and Collegia TV. For more information, visit www.edutainmentlearning.com.
Let's get straight to the questions. And the first one is going to come directly from me, which is, we can see from the video that you were flying both fixed-wing aircrafts and helicopters. And I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about the difference between the two.
Well, helicopters are cooler. I'll just start with that. So the training progression with the Navy, which is, as I mentioned, who the Coast Guard trains with, is to start in fixed wing. And these days, I think they actually start in Cessnas up until like PPL, and then they get into the bigger planes. But so I learned all of my basic aeronautical skills in a fixed wing, and then transitioned to the helicopter after that. So I had that foundation of fixed wing, but the majority of my time is in helicopters. There are many differences, obviously. You know, you can't glide a helicopter. You can auto rotate it. If you lose your engines, you have to keep that head spinning enough to get you down to the ground safely. And that was a very fun exercise to practice. And then in an aircraft, you can't hover. And hovering is just one of my, like I said, one of my favorite things about that aircraft's capability was just being able to go places and stop and help people in ways that, you know, an aircraft, a fixed wing aircraft can't do. So they're both great though.
If you could say a few words about students that might be interested in pursuing a career in aviation through the Coast Guard, why you think that's a good idea and some steps that they might want to do so while they're in middle school and high school to prepare themselves for that experience.
Yeah, so in order to become a pilot in the Coast Guard, you need to be an officer. And there are a few ways you can become an officer. I kind of took an unusual route by being enlisted first. And the Coast Guard has a program that allows you to get 30 college credits and be in for 4 years and make a certain rank enlisted. And then you can apply to officer candidate school. And it's all very competitive. The more traditional ways of becoming an officer in the Coast Guard are to either go to the Coast Guard Academy, which is a small school in New London, Connecticut. It's a beautiful campus. It's very engineering and math heavy, and it's a seagoing service. So the whole time you're there, you're sort of indoctrinated to go to sea, and you can expect, like, you can ask to go to flight school and compete for that, but everyone who comes into the Coast Guard should just expect to go to sea. And then the other way is to get your four-year degree at another school and apply for an officer candidate school opportunity. So those are the three main ways that people come into the Coast Guard. We also take accessions from other services. And why the Coast Guard? I have my own story about how I ended up there, but what I will say is that most people join the Coast Guard because of the missions. It's a very rewarding experience to be in service to help people who are in distress, and also to enforce laws that keep our population safe. And when I say that, I'm mostly referring to the drug interdictions. And then, of course, there are the fisheries laws that we enforced that protect our oceans and our resources. So it's just all of the missions in the Coast Guard, from my perspective, are very altruistic. And you get this immediate gratification to feel like you've made an impact in the world.
And you mentioned in your career in aviation, the Coast Guard, that you were involved in different disciplines within the Coast Guard's mission. Carlos asks, which of those was your favorite?
Well, flying, the actual act of flying and my ability to have immediate impact on scene to help someone was the most gratifying. However, I really, really enjoyed everything had its own benefits. And so being the person in charge of putting the assets, the ships and the aircraft, multinational, like, you know, ships from Colombia, aircraft from the UK, and everything in between, to get them on target, to use the intelligence that we had about drugs that were being transported to the United States in very heavy, large loads, to be able to put those ships on scene was a really exciting and satisfying experience, to know that I pulled all of that information together and was able to, based on all of those years of experience before, knowing what the ship's capabilities were, knowing what the aircraft capabilities were, knowing what they would be able to do when they got on scene. And then we had a bell on the floor, or the watch floor, that we would ring every time that we made an interdiction. And that just got everybody excited. But then that last job that I had as a foreign diplomat had its own rewards. Helping countries develop their own national security and keeping them trained and proficient in supporting the embassy's efforts in U.S. diplomacy in foreign countries. So I don't have a favorite. It was just a progression of really wonderful opportunities for me.
We'll call it a multi-way tie then.
There you go.
Chloe asks, what was your favorite subject in school and how do you think it helped prepare you for your career?
French, and it didn't. French was my favorite subject in school. I did go to an aviation. So in middle school, they had an aerospace class, and I took it in sixth grade and in eighth grade. And for part of my high school time, I was in an aviation magnet school. So of course I loved my aviation stuff, but for some reason, foreign languages were a thing for me.
Maybe it's the diplomat in you, who knows?
And I never got to use any of it.
Matthew asks, how have you seen technology influence your industry over the years?
Well, I think the place where I can think about the widest delta of when I started and when I ended in my career was in navigation. So you saw those paper charts that we were using to plot right before I joined the Coast Guard. We were using very old technology of radio signals that were transmitted, you know, out into the ether, and hopefully you would get one radio signal from one position and another radio signal from another position, and then hopefully you could figure out where in the ocean that you were. It was very primitive compared to the really highly advanced GPS equipment that we have now, and especially the way that GPS integrates into our navigation systems, both on ships and on aircraft. I mean, you can hover an aircraft over a GPS point now, and certainly you couldn't do that when I started. So,
how does being a woman who is a leader in military aviation, how has that changed over the years?
That's a good question. I think the younger people who are joining the service now, or who were my peers, in fact, really it didn't matter. It was dealing with people from previous generations who were still in leadership positions, who maybe had some archaic ideas, who may have made things difficult for women and for me in some cases. But I didn't really ever have any issues with my peers or my subordinates in terms of leadership. I mean, I won the leadership award at Officer Candidate School, and I received leadership awards in the rest of my career, and I felt appreciated for my skills, and I didn't feel discounted by anybody junior to me because I was a woman.
Interesting. Okay, shifting gears a little bit, we have a number of students that are going to be watching this video that are part of a drone aviation careers program, and one of them, Aura, asks, in what way has your career, if at all, intersected with drones or unmanned aircraft?
So not very, so I will confess that I'm not even novice in the field of the Coast Guard refers to them as unmanned aerial systems, UAS. And they were just dabbling in that while I was still in the aviation jobs that I was doing. So they were taking pilots, mostly fixed wing pilots, and transitioning them or training them to learn how to operate drones. And then kind of co-locating them with Customs and Border Protection, because we have a really strong partnership with them. And then as I became that targeting chief, thinking about surveillance over open ocean and like the sheer cost of operating a manned aircraft, an aircraft with a full crew and fuel and all the things, it just felt like there were a lot of things that we could be doing with UASs that would be more efficient and more affordable. And then today, the Coast Guard has a program. I think it's already operational on the national security cutters. These are the large ships that go down and do the things that I was talking about that actually carry UASs on them to help them execute those missions. And there's some land-based stuff too. Those are all contract now though. So that it's an evolving program and I don't have my finger on the pulse of it, but you can go online and there's a website that you can, if you just look up Coast Guard UAS, you'll learn more about it.
Excellent. I was hoping you would be willing to talk for a moment about that transition that you made from Coast Guard aviation into diplomacy and what that was like, what skills maybe that you took with you from your work in the Coast Guard as you transition to being a diplomat?
Well, so I always knew that I wanted to do, I knew that the Coast Guard had these jobs, and my grandmother had been a SPAR during World War II, so she was in the Women's Coast Guard Reserve, and then she was a Foreign Service Officer for the State Department. And so I think there was some inspiration through her of like this ambition to either retire from the Coast Guard and join the State Department or do that for the Coast Guard. What I brought to the job that I received from the bulk of my Coast Guard career was just this operational proficiency, understanding how coastal forces fit into national security and being able to have conversations about that with both State Department, like my ambassador, and with the local police and militaries. When I got that assignment, the Coast Guard sent me to 6 months of training to learn some other skills. And one of those that I kind of wish I had learned earlier was truly how to be diplomatic and how to, when you're faced with a confrontation, how to navigate that in a professional and calm way and not escalate the situation. Because as you might imagine, as a pilot and in the military, things are very competitive. It's kind of a testosterone filled world. And so people could be aggressive. And so I had the skill to operate in that environment, and I needed these softer skills to do my job. And they've really helped me just as a human being.
You see those diplomacy skills coming into use in everyday life?
Yeah. At the grocery store. Yeah. Everywhere.
All right. I think your career is a tremendous lesson to our students about kind of the interesting twists and turns where life takes you. You talked in your video about wanting to be an astronaut, and somehow that has transformed into you now being an author and a promoter of women in aviation, and someone who has built a tremendous community of people who share those interests with you and bringing them together, which I think is wonderful. And so I'd like you to talk first a little bit about making that transition into becoming an author and then what this community building experience has meant to you.
Yeah, before I do, I just want to say something a little bit about kind of that trajectory that you just mentioned about having goals and vision and working hard. And when you do, opportunities kind of present themselves to you that you didn't know, like you can't even imagine right now what opportunities are going to be available or possible for you later. And so just moving in a direction and working hard will open opportunities. And then you have to be receptive to the ones that are going to be right for you. So I just think that's a really important takeaway from my own life. And the transition, I talked about COVID, feeling isolated just like everyone else and not having a way to get back into aviation, which was my goal. When I retired, I was gonna start flying again. That was gonna feed the and inform my writing and keep me motivated to get this book done and get it out there and inspire the next generation. And I was just losing it because I was so isolated from the community. And it was an absolute like moment of serendipity when I woke up one morning and I said, you know, I'm gonna connect with my community by asking if anybody wants to get together virtually and discuss books. And I think everybody was so starved for that kind of connection. I mean, I had 600 members in the first week. I had 1200 members by the end of the first month. And I'm happy to say that it continues, that we continue to meet and it's still thriving and there's still so much, in fact, it's building. There's so much enthusiasm around it, but the reason it was possible was because of that isolation and because of the virtual skills that we all gained from that experience and speed to trust. And that's something that I think was really interesting. I don't think people before COVID would have been willing to connect the way that we do now virtually. And it really influenced the speed at which we were willing to connect in this way.
Yeah, I think it is amazing also. I think COVID definitely sort of speed charged that and created this new environment that exists. But now that the environment exists, we can continue to grow and nurture this. And I can tell you on behalf of the students that we work with, that they're probably very excited about networking with you and taking advantage of this community that you've built to help drive their careers forward. So I think that
you're all welcome to connect with me. I'm at Literary Aviatrix on social media, and you can listen to these very inspiring stories. All these interviews that I do with these authors, you can find them on the Aviatrix Book Review YouTube channel and podcast.
Excellent. Wonderful. And while we're plugging things, I want to just really quickly say to folks that are interested in the aviation fields and drone aviation to please talk to your school counselors about getting involved in our careers program in aviation. And you can find out more information about that by emailing collegiatv@collegia.org if you're within the Academica networks stay in tune with emails from your school and your news feed on your dashboards. For more information about that, I want to thank Liz Booker very much for coming. And we end every one of these interviews with the same question. I'm going to give it to you right now, which is, do you have any last piece of advice that you would give to our viewers about moving their careers forward or going into a career path like yours?
Well, I think I gave you that answer earlier, but a career like mine or any career is just get moving in that direction. Spend a little less time on TikTok and just a little bit more pursuing your curiosity for those subjects that you're interested in pursuing and build those skills so that you're ready for those opportunities when they open to you.
That's wonderful. Thank you very much for your time, and everybody, please enjoy the rest of your day.